Revising Reality is the book that has been released today, a biblical look into the cosmos. Both two of the four co-authors, Douglas Woodward and Anthony Patch, are with us today. I got a question for both you guys. And we'll start with you, Anthony. What was one of the things or one of the most important things you learned from the other authors in this book?
That they're a lot smarter than me.
Yeah, seems to be going around.
I tend to be flippant, and I have to apologize for that. It's just that I try to balance out this stuff because the last thing I want is for people to become depressed or, you know, morose over what we're presenting here. And, you know, I like to say God has a great sense of humor, not that I do, but that he does. And that's how he keeps me somewhat in balance, even though I say I'm certifiable. I think that what really impresses me is there's two things. First of all, confirmation. I see crossovers in our research all the time because we're tending to step on each other's research. And yet it reinforces for each of us that we're on the right path. And because we are Christians, we are guided by the Holy Spirit. And so it's not all that much of a surprise or a leap to see these crossovers occurring. But what it does for me is it encourages me to continue this pursuit, not just because I feel like it's my mission, my calling, but because I owe my collaborators, my other three co-authors, as much support in their areas of research that I can, because I'll run across things that I can feed to them that they understand better than me. So walking away from this whole experience, it's been edifying, it's been reinforcing, it's encouraging, and it shows me that putting our energies together, we can really come up with something that is tangible, understandable, and useful for people so that if they need to make that choice to go to Jesus, as I said, we hope and pray that this will be a tool in that direction.
Exactly. And you know, Mr. Woodward, you had written something, of course, about tonight's show. DoomsdayDoug.com is his website. The point of all this is that the universe is well-ordered. It was designed and shaped for humanity to live in it, despite the fact that Sagan and his colleagues, and you know, even as we see today, now I'm kind of going off script from what you wrote, but we're seeing the theories, the religion of Darwin, the holes are being shot in there. You know, in his theories and in the religion of Darwinism, we're, according to Sagan and others, we're just a carbon-based life form, tiny in stature now, or a quaint blue planet, this blue marble, or orbiting a very large or a very average star. You know, to attempt to minimize God's creation and humanity is what the Luciferians, the globalists, have done. And you're blowing holes in all of this. You're just punching holes in this. And that's kind of the essence here. So,
yeah,
Mr. Woodward,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. It really is, because if you look at, in the introduction, I talk a bit about, you know, what is it that causes the secular atheist to find reasons to be hopeful or to find meaning in life. You know, for Carl Sagan, it was purely and solitarily just the sense of awe that he got in sort of looking at, you know, the great nebula and the cosmos and just the sort of the wonderment of seeing these incredible sights in the stars and the galaxies and so forth. But, you know, that's really all the meaning is for him, because otherwise, as you sort of said there, it's, you know, it's just like, well, we're just a, you know, kind of trivial creatures on a small planet and an average sun on the edge of the Milky Way galaxy. If you look at someone like Richard Dawkins, the evolutionist. You know, he wrote a book called, like, Evolution is the Only Game in Town. You know, these are the guys that have the gloom and doom. I mean, to think that the evolutionary principle, that there's this some great principle that is driving us progressively forward, that this is the reason to have hope, when in fact science itself talks in terms of entropy, the fact that where the universe is going is eventually a death in the cold, where all that is just eventually, stars move so far apart from one another that they just go cold and die a cold death. I mean, science does not give us a real sense of meaning. It does not give us a sense of purpose. But instead, if we look at the Judeo-Christian scripture, if we look at the Bible and what it teaches us about the fact that there is a principle of sort of decay or corruption in the creation, but that decay and corruption is going to be overcome, as Paul says in chapter 8 of Romans, that the creation has been subjected to futility, but for a purposeful hope that as we are the children of God, we will eventually be glorified. And when we are glorified at the return of Christ, all of creation will all of a sudden be, it's like rebirth. It will shed this corruption, and it will experience, whether it's recreated or this principle is somehow eradicated from the universe, God is going to bring back a perfected universe again. And, you know, as I sometimes say, Earth is a cosmically decisive planet. In other words, it doesn't matter how small it is. It doesn't really matter whether we believe in a geocentric universe or a heliocentric universe or none of the above. The reality is that it is a sort of anthro-theocentric universe, meaning a God-man relationship between God and man, and that it's our glorification that we are promised that the creation itself will be revitalized and made new again. So of all people, we have great reason to hope. So I believe that Sagan and Neil deGrasse Tyson and all those, they were well-meaning men, and they had great visions and so forth. But at the end of the day, we have hope. We have the promise that our bodies will be restored. We will be immortal, but we won't be a digitized avatar. We will be revitalized and reborn in some type of fleshly body that, as Paul says, can take on immortality. And once we are at that state, we are in fact being allowed to share in the glory of God. That's one of the key themes that Paul talks about, is how we will be glorified. And so that is, you know, that is the ultimate cosmic principle, that all of creation is heading towards that destination.
Very interesting. And again, it says in the scriptures there's nothing new under the sun, and it's hard to imagine when you look at how far we are today technologically, what could have matched that back in ancient times? And it's very hard to put together. Where should we go from here, gentlemen?
Let's go back to the Large Hadron Collider.
Okay.
Why not?
You know, talked about the merging of these machines. It kind of sounds like the merging of human and angel DNA. But when they merged the ring-based collider, the LHC, with the Awake Project's linear accelerator, it's only 30 meters in length, but 1,000 times more powerful. The new name, and I don't know if I've shared this on your show before, but the new name within the scientific circles, the physicists and engineers at CERN, they don't call it the LHC anymore. So people might be interested, I don't know, in the new name, but it's called the VHEEP. So it's capital V, capital H, capital E, small e, capital P. That stands for Very High Energy Electron Proton Collider. That's what's going to generate the 20 peta electron volts. So in our book, and Douglas, I want to thank you for bringing this research out in the book, we talk about Tesla and Einstein. I like to put Einstein and the gravity model of the universe, which is what is put out for public consumption by CERN and by the scientific community in, at large. For example, black holes, as I said. The Tesla model of the universe is the electric model of the universe. And people that know about Tesla's research know that he was focused on electricity. But there's a gentleman, a physicist, a Russian physicist that Douglas brought to bear in our book by the name, and I cannot pronounce this, but his name is Nikolai, and I'll
Kozarev.
Kozarev. Thank you, Kozarev.
That's right.
Now, he predated Tesla. Tesla actually studied his research and his work. And his work in the Soviet regime was classified top secret. Now, here's the thing I want to point out. He had said that, and Tesla later reflected much the same statement, but he said, the physical medium behaves as a fluid to solid bodies and a solid to light and heat. Moreover, with sufficiently high voltage and frequency, the medium itself could be accessed. Now, you have to define the medium, but let's, for the purpose of what we're discussing today and in this book, accessing the medium is what, in the parlance of those at CERN, when they say they are trying to recreate the Big Bang, which is a gravity-based model, an Einsteinian model of the universe, accessing the ether, as Tesla had said, or the medium, is recreating the moment of the Big Bang. It is reaching that finite point, that singularity from which everything sprang. Now, I don't adhere to the Big Bang theory, but if you move over to the Tesla model and the electric model of the universe, and we talk about the medium, we're talking about plasma, as I mentioned earlier. But even deeper than the plasma, at the quantum level, we are talking about separating quantum particles, breaking what is called the nuclear bond. There's four primary forces in nature, but breaking the nuclear bond between quarks in a quark gluon condensate known as strangelets, and you've heard me mention this before, but breaking that bond results in opening up the dimensional portal. So with sufficient high voltage and frequency, the medium itself can be accessed. This is what we're talking about, and this is what he described back in 1891. So the sufficiently high voltage and frequency is what they seek by combining the two machines into the VHEEP and achieving 20 tera electron volts. That allows them access to the medium.
The comment I was going to make about that Kozarev had particularly talked about, this is, there's actually a guy named Roger Boscovich that was Bohemian, I guess, and someone that that Tesla studied. Boscovich worked in the 18th century, and so Tesla was quite a fan of Boscovich, but Boscovich was coming up with ideas that it took a Tesla to actually exploit. No one could deal with what he was talking about back in 1760 or something like that. He was actually, although he was from Czechoslovakia, in effect today's Czechoslovakia, he was made a member of the Royal Society in London. This guy was a genius, well, you know, literally 2.5 centuries ahead of his time. But Joseph B. Farrell talks a bit about this in his works, talks about the medium, the plasma. Then one of the reasons that the ether, the concept of the ether as a medium, which is something that Einstein had a love-hate relationship with in terms of whether or not he would agree that there is an ether, which, by the way, is the Greek word for atmosphere, that this ether, in fact, seems to possess energy. That's why it was discovered when the hydrogen bombs were in fact exploded or ignited, that the energy calculation, the amount of energy that actually was emitted, was far more than what the physicists had anticipated and had calculated. And what they ultimately came to realize is that the explosion was in fact igniting the medium. In effect, it was gaining or leaching power from the ether. And it was bringing that, it was sucking that into the explosion itself. And so, and that's kind of what really the electric universe idea is that we are surrounded by plasma. There is no real vacuum in space. Plasma runs throughout space. And in fact, that's why that there are these Birkeland currents that can traverse, in fact, as Anthony said, light years, because there is a medium that propagates those currents, just like air is a medium that propagates sound. If we didn't have air, you wouldn't be able to hear sound. Sound facilitates sound waves. And so plasma in space, in effect, facilitates the currents that pass from stars or from planet to planet and so forth, which is, again, it's the basis of the notion of the electric universe. I'll stop.
Wow. Okay. I mean, okay, so... Yeah, I'm not even going to comment on that because I'm not even sure I can. I understand what you said, but I'm going to have to re-listen to this on the archive just to be sure. I mean,
that's okay. It just means plasma is everywhere. It means there is no empty space. It's everywhere.
Right. We're kind of swimming in. It would be like us in a swimming pool, except yes. You just can't feel what's around. Okay, I got it.
Yeah. Is that right, Anthony?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, reinforce the idea, the concept that the planets are all electrically connected. But let's go out to the cosmos. Everything's connected. In fact, they're all quantum entangled. Einstein, just to give him some credit, he said that quantum entanglement is spooky action at a distance. In other words, you've got two particles, let's say, and they don't even have to be identical particles, but you stimulate or measure or affect a particle here in this reality and light years across the cosmos. Another particle that is quantum entangled, that is electrically connected, and I'm going to underscore that in a moment, is identically and at the same time affected. So this goes to the discussion of time. Now, Einstein had his theory of relativity and time and mass, you know, bending space and curving time, and wormholes came from that and black holes came from that discussion. The point that I would like to underscore that I think is reinforced by the scientists that we're presenting in the book in addition to Tesla is that quantum entanglement does not involve time. At the quantum level, time does not exist. Now, this was something that Einstein didn't really have a firm grasp on because he lacked the scientific tools and instruments to be able to make accurate measurements to prove this. But if you have a particle that simultaneously can affect another particle. There is no transmission of a signal between two quantum entangled particles. They just exist in a state that is simultaneous to one another. Now, this is a concept that's difficult to wrap your head around because at the quantum level, the standard model, the classical model of physics and the laws of physics do not apply. It's a whole new ballgame. So we have to somewhat take it at a face value or take it in faith that it quantum actually, entanglement though, exists.
I was going to say, Anthony, in some ways it actually reinforces the biblical concept because what it's really saying, and this is the thing, Doug and Joe, that I think can in some ways simplify it, is just assume for a moment that the speed of light only pertains to certain kinds of energy, like light energy and radio, and so forth. But what Anthony's saying, which is really stunning when you think about it, is that two particles on the opposite sides of the universe that are separated by literally billions of light years could instantly talk to each other. And once you understand that the speed of light is not a constant, it's not a barrier to travel or to communication, all of a sudden Einstein's concepts, it's not that they don't apply. Just like Newton's concepts still applied in an Einsteinian universe. They still applied to a certain point, but then they had limitations. Einstein's ideas apply to a point, but then there are areas where they don't apply. And what's being discovered is, in fact, communication can occur. In effect, we could, you know, two angels could talk to each other, let's say, completely across the universe from one another and communicate instantly. There is no, you know, radio wave that has to travel 186,000 miles per second. Once you understand that, then all of a sudden the idea of time travel is, in effect, not really applicable. But there's no time that has to elapse, for communication to occur. So, you know, let's assume for a second that God's on the other side of the universe. We can talk to God instantly. He can talk to us instantly. Now, the reality of how we think about God spatially and so forth, that's not really a good way to think about it. But it points out that the kinds of limitations that we have been taught in our cosmology, really since we were kids or young adults, whatever, old enough to understand some of these concepts, that some of these things are just wrong. They aren't true. And that's really some of the stuff that we're trying to point out in the book. And in fact, they may be much more like what the Bible says than what Einstein taught us and so forth. So I'll stop there.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is your research and the I want to be careful here. I suppose your research, your findings, which are speaking of now and contained in your book, Revising Reality, they do more to verify the Bible or the biblical reality, reality, as
That's
opposed
right.
to scientific junk. And I that's a nice word for it.
It's not junk. It's just that it's confined to a certain context.
Okay.
And so the rules that are set up by Newton or by Einstein, they're rules that apply, but they have a context and they have a limitation.
And that self-imposed limitation, or actually putting God in a box, like we spoke to Jonathan Kahn yesterday.
That's right. He is not in a box.
Okay, and there it is, folks. And see, when we talk with guests like Ted Brower, you know, we talk about scalar waves and, you know, prayer and all of this. This is why, I mean, all of our guests have this. Are you getting the idea that we're actually kind of connecting the dots on a larger sense through our guests and our guest tonight, Anthony Patch from AnthonyPatch.com and S. Doug Woodward from DoomsdayDoug.com. And their new book is Revising Reality. Available today, out today on Amazon, but accessible on multiple venues, including AnthonyPatch.com and Amazon as well. But so all of this, I mean, this. So really, what you said earlier too about Anthony, what you said about no fear. We shouldn't be. None of this should make us anxious or anything like that. Man, you're right, because what you're doing is. All of this is, if nothing else, verifying, authenticating the fingerprints of God on humanity and the fact that we are God's creatures. I mean, not that we needed authentication or that needed authentication, but it should make us really feel empowered by your writings. I didn't mean to kind of go off on a tangent like that, but
no, that's right. Well, no, I think you're just trying to absorb some pretty viscous material here. But it really is what we're trying to do is to say, hey, Christians, Judeo-Christian worldview or understanding of the cosmos is so encouraging because it reinforces that the story of humankind is at the center of the cosmos. It is not like Carl Sagan, who was a wonderful man, Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's a wonderful man. It's not like they're saying. So Christians need to have their brains washed from the brainwashing that we've been going through for our whole lives. Anthony, our early 60s. I guess that's how old you are, Anthony. Aren't you like 62 like I am? I can't remember.
I will not divulge my identity nor my age.
I just like to say I look younger than I am. But anyway, that's the truth. The truth is that we have great reason to be hopeful.
Yeah, and you know, I don't want the, you know, the lame thing that laid on us that, oh, well, we've read the book, we know how the story, you know, ends, and you know, that's true to an extent, but you know, it's been used as a pejorative against Christians who say, well, we know how it all turns out and it's all great and you know, Satan's defeated and we don't have to suffer through anything and whatever else you want to bring into that discussion, you know, be it the rapture or anything else. But the point is, yeah, God allows everything to happen according to his plan and his timing. And there is nothing beyond his control. And the hubris of Lucifer and his minions, and therefore those that have fallen under his lies and his deception, believing in things such as defeating death, as we said earlier, that ye shall be as gods, and that you can communicate with, let's say, fallen angels that we're not supposed to be communicating with, and obtaining information and technologies that we're not supposed to have, well, that's not beyond God's control. That's his plan, too. We have free will. He allows every imagining to be realized, and there is, as you said, nothing new under the sun. So I'm trying to encourage people to understand that, yeah, this is pretty nefarious, and it's born from Lucifer, but these are tools of judgment. These are tools that God uses. Lucifer is God's tool. He created Lucifer. And it's my view that he is a tool of judgment, and all of his technology will be employed as tools of judgment. If you want to think of CERN as the guillotine, well, that may be one way of looking at it, but you don't have to be fearful. Just turn to Jesus Christ. It's really simple. It's really easy. I was on with another gentleman, Richie from Boston, on Friday. Great guy. Great conversation for 2 hours. And he said that. It's so simple. Why do people resist it? Well, who knows?
Mr. Patch and Mr. Woodward, we're coming up against our final break. Folks, Anthony Patch and Douglas Woodward are our guests. They are the co-authors of Revising Reality, A Biblical Look into the Cosmos, available today. Go to anthonypatch.com, go to doomsdaydoug.com, or go to Amazon to find the book. We'll be right back for our last segment right after this.
Hagman and Hagman Report. We're back for our final segment, final half hour with our tremendous guest, Doug Woodward. DoomsdayDoug.com. Anthony Patch from AnthonyPatch.com. Their newest work, Revising Reality, A Biblical Look into the Cosmos. The first volume. That's right. And you know, you might be listening, joining us late, and saying, wait a minute. We got an election to go to, you know, go through, and we've got all these problems, economy's falling, and you guys are over in the corner talking about this stuff. Where's the relevance? Well, and again, I'll just mention the quote, Greg Jackson. You know, a lot of conversation in the alternative media is an inch deep and a mile wide, to paraphrase Greg Jackson. This strikes at the essence of really everything that's going on, and the relevance is very simply that what is happening is, I mean, we are here as a, well, the universe is well ordered. We are here. We've been designed and shaped. Humanity has been, by God. The theory of the religion of evolution, of course, as a side note, is debunked, obviously. I mean, the all importance is, I mean, the essence of our conversation today in this broadcast is touches every aspect of our lives that we're living, I think. And, you know, one of the gentlemen mentioned about, you know, we know how the story ends. So, I mean, God, in the end, God wins. That's true. But that trivializes, in my view, anyway, that trivializes. And I say that too. We do know how the story ends, but that doesn't mean we don't pay attention and we don't seek answers and seek knowledge. I was just very quickly, and I'll turn back over to our guest, but I remember this like it was yesterday. I had the opportunity to spend some time in Montana with Steve Quayle, and I remember him and I being alone together in a room, and we were talking and deep in conversation. I mean, it was like, you know, the second hour we were talking, and you know, he said to me, as we approach the end of days, we, you know, the knowledge will, the what has been kept secret will, you know, be made known. And it's a very exciting time, and it's a very important time for us to understand it. And those who understand it, he said to me, will be that much, I mean, he was talking about lucidity and being sober and sober-minded and intellectually, you know, attuned to what's going on. And I'll never forget that conversation. That's kind of what we're going through tonight. Kind of a left-handed way and a long way of saying, great book, great guests, and of course, four authors to this book. You've got Anthony Patch, S. Douglas Woodward, Josh Peck, and Gonzo Shimura, with a foreword by our own Stan Dale. I guess I shouldn't say our own, but Stan Dale is with us every Tuesday night. Joe, I'm going to kick it over to you.
All right, as we get back with Mr. Patch and Mr. Woodward, I don't know where a good place to start would be, but I do have a question and a place if you want to get into this. The cosmic wars of space, the real Star Wars of ancient times. Can we talk about this a little?
Sure. Yeah, it's it's an area that Joseph P. Farrell talks about to a great extent. You know, his site, the GizaDeathStar.com, he's written, I don't know, probably six or eight books. He's probably written 25 books, but probably six or eight of them are specifically on this, one in particular, the Cosmic War, that he talks about in terms of ancient texts, as well as the work of like Tom Beard and Tom Van Flandern in terms of understanding some really, really amazing things. Ion cannons, plasma pinches, some these really strange, very esoteric, very arcane concepts or weapons that might have existed. It's not at all clear that those ideas are consistent with kind of the concepts. I should say they're consistent with the concepts of the electric universe, but there's a different kind of myth going on in those ideas, Farrell's ideas, Richard Dolan, some of the others that Farrell hangs out with, Catherine Austin Fitz and so forth. They have kind of a different mythos than the mythos that is the electric universe and then really the story that the Bible tells us. The Bible only drops a few hints about what might have happened before. You know, the concept of Rahab, was Rahab in fact a planet? When it talks about Lucifer walking amongst the stones of fire, are the stones of fire the planets? Or is Lucifer somehow confined to this earth? We talk about some of those things, we get into some of those things, and that's kind of the doorway to the next volume. Getting into the nature of the creation and what is it that we know and what is it that we can speculate or conjecture on from the Bible. And I think that's okay to do that as long as we qualify that it is not what we know. We don't know that the Scripture teaches this. The Scripture just hints at certain things. But I think that's true. I had a comment from Stan Dale's. We were kind of going back and forth talking about things in the foreword, and actually he writes in the foreword, which is really a remarkable statement. Let me go find it so I can quote it exactly. But he talks about, you know, his belief, his sort of supposition that the nature of what occurred early with Adam, with Abraham, and so forth. Let me see if I can find this comment that he makes, because it's a very powerful, powerful comment. It was right from the same area that Anthony, you talked about earlier. I think it was, let's see if it's this. Hold on just a second.
It's towards the end.
Was it towards the end? I just sort of messed my point up. But anyway, I'll just sort of recap it. Essentially, what he was saying was that his sense is that that they're really, Adam and Abraham, Moses, that there really was, they really did write down things, if you will, and that their conviction about the nature of history and where things are going is not beyond us to understand, and that we're closer, to Adam and Eve and to Abraham, the great patriarchs of the Bible, than we realize, and that the continuity of history between those great personages of the Bible and where we are today, there's a lot more continuity than we realize, and that we're all part of the same story arc. And we might talk just for a couple of minutes, Anthony, even if you want to, you talked about earlier about sort of the lame, view that, well, maybe we're saying, hey, we know how the story ends. Well, Lucifer, Satan, believes the story ends differently. And, perhaps he's psychotic, but he actually believes that there is a chance to defeat God, that there is, in fact, a chance to kill God, to destroy the creation, to recreate the creation and humankind in his own image. And certainly something Gonzo talks about in his sections, but I don't know, Anthony, you might talk about that. You it sort of gets into what the book of Jasher said about, the idea that Nimrod fired projectiles into heaven, and when they came back to earth, they were covered in blood. And that there's this idea that Satan has that the Tower of Babel, Nimrod tried to kill God, and that's exactly what the real sort of goal or purpose of CERN is today, is to create new types of heavenly projectiles that in effect can kill Christ and his mighty army when he comes back to Earth. I know this sounds absolutely crazy, but, this is actually part of the story of the book of Jasher, and I think, Anthony, you've talked about these things. You might help me out here, sure, and jump into that.
Well, because it's crazy, you give it to me. Thank you.
Exactly. I think that's only perfect. I should set you up, right?
Well, you talk about ion cannons. Well, the Large Hadron Collider, in essence, is a weapons program. They are producing, and this comes as a proof of concept experiment from Brookhaven Laboratory, the relativistic heavy ion collider, in which strangelets were produced at 10 tera electron volts. That process was shipped over to CERN. CERN produces strangelets every time they collide particles above 10 tera electron volts. They're running at 13 tera electron volts. So what's so special about strangelets? They're a quark gluon condensate. I said earlier they're seeking to separate at the nuclear bonds of quarks to open the portal. But strangelets are the most powerful explosive substance in the known universe. They predate the God particle, the hadron that they found, the Higgs boson. Now, there's only a 90% probability that they found that, but this predates in the timeline of the Big Bang, if you adhere to that construct. They resulted in the Big Bang. They created the Big Bang, this explosive material called strangelets. Now, this can be used as a super weapon. If it is the most powerful explosive in the known universe, then Lucifer will employ that to kill angels and perhaps try to kill God. Now, he's operating under the mindset of deception, of lies. He's the father of lies. He cannot think outside that box of deception. He's so delusional that he actually has convinced himself that he can kill God. And that's the essence of the delusion and the lies that is then put onto mankind. And they are caught up in that same box of lies. But these are actual weapons programs. Directed energy weapons, kinetic energy weapons, and explosives are being produced at CERN for the coming battle. It is nothing more than a weapons program. It has its roots. In 1954, they broke ground. they were building computer models of nuclear warheads. They were modeling explosions in the computer because they could no longer detonate below ground and above ground in the atmosphere. CERN is all about nuclear warheads and developing more advanced weapons. And the strangelets make nuclear warheads look like firecrackers. That's the weaponry that's being produced there for this battle.
And CERN is an outgrowth of the Nazi Nazis, their weapon weapons program, as well as the U.S. programs, Parsons and such. Right? Would that be an accurate statement?
Specific to the Nazis, and Joseph P. Farrell goes into this, but my leap over to CERN, because he doesn't necessarily make the connection to CERN as I do, but the Nazi Bell, the Degloka, the Nazi Bell project was a small synchrotron particle accelerator. It mimicked the process at the northern pole of Saturn. It was red mercury spun in opposite directions at extremely high speeds through the inducement of direct current, DC electricity. The electric model of the universe, the plasma, is all employed in the Nazi Bell. From that, which produced synchrotron energies, gamma rays, X-rays, killed many of the scientists, the Nazi scientists, in the first stages of development of the Bell before they put the shielding around the machine. But from that germination sprung the Large Hadron Collider and all the other synchrotron ring-based particle accelerators on the planet came right out of the Bell Project.
I think there was a really good pun buried in that, from the germination.
Oh, please. See, I'm the crazy one. I'm certifiable, and you found that. Great.
I'm really bad about making bad connections, and that was certainly a bad connection. Let me read the quote. I did find the quote from Stan, and of course he said it much more eloquently than I tried to repeat it. But he said, as the authors go on to discuss Moses and the book of Genesis, I found myself wanting to sit them down in a quiet place so that I could share some of the evidence I found that suggests Moses compiled parts of Genesis from clay tablets personally signed by Adam, Abraham, and Noah. This is exciting, and it is the nature of theological discovery. It is how biblical knowledge grows. Anyway, I just thought, man, that's a stunning statement. So I don't know if Stan had shared that with you all before, but you know, that's just a few of the comments that he makes in the foreword that are like, wow, kinds
Indeed.
Of statements.
Yes. That is fabulous. Okay. Well, we've got about, 11, 12 minutes left of the program here. Let's close hard. So how do you want to do this? I mean, what do you think? What haven't we talked about that we need to address?
Well, there's so much in the book. The book really begins with, of course, discussing, you know, the angelic entities, the Nephilim, the fallen angels, and trying to provide some context for all that, because that's become such a popular subject that, you know, certainly Steve Quayle, Ellen Marzulli, a number of people have talked about that, the giants and so forth. And so what we're trying to do is kind of bring that back into the context of the overall cosmic picture. And so, you know, that's one point that I would certainly try to make is that we're trying to place that in context, because those are, you know, those are stunning cosmological ideas, that there are these angels and these angels could cohabitate with women and so forth. And this is really the context that we need to place it in, is understanding that the way that the cosmos really works, the nature of the personalities in play, and then, you know, tying in, as I mentioned some time ago, the work of Dr. Michael Heiser, I'm getting tired, I think, in talking about the divine council, the heavenly hosts, and so forth, the fact that we're dealing with these different entities or identities that exist in the cosmos. And so one of the real core foundational points to make here is that if we understand these things better, we're better equipped to really deal in the issue or in the theater of spiritual warfare. We need to understand who we are, where we fit in the cosmos, you know, why God created us, why is Satan, you know, is he so angry at us? And so much of it is because we usurped his place, and he lost his place, you might say, and we were placed in his place. The divine council that Dr. Heiser talks about, you know, the sons of man were divided apparently by 70, which is the number of the divine council, and so each of these, in effect, supernatural beings, which Dr. Heiser believes, and I would certainly agree, that they represent the powers and principalities, such as Daniel talks about the prince of Grecia, the prince of Persia, and so forth. We're really dealing with
I didn't mean to overtalk you, but Dr. Heiser will be a guest next week on our program.
Oh, great.
Want to let everyone know. Perfect. Okay, go ahead, sir.
Perfect. Yeah. So anyway, so his work is so just terrific, really, really wonderful, and opens a lot of insight into these things. And so once we understand that that the divine council is the way that God has chosen to rule the cosmos, and that the divine council appears to be corrupted, and then God separated off for himself a nation, Israel, and worked through that nation. In other words, we talk about these things, and we talk about how all this plays into the drama or the story arc of the Bible, and where humankind fits in this story arc. So, you know, that's again the context of the work that Josh did, talking about these kinds of things, the issue of, you know, do angels have DNA? All these things are issues that have been kind of broached by studies on fallen angels and giants and so forth, but they haven't necessarily all been placed into the context of the cosmos. And so that's one of the objectives that we had in writing this book, was to try to provide that kind of a context.
Interesting. Where we where do you want to go from here, guys? We got about 7 minutes left of the show.
Let me do a shameless plug. Can I do a shameless plug?
Sure.
Should.
Well, I don't know.
We're plugging a book. Can I plug the conference?
Sure.
All right. Hey, on my website, I've got a link to the Hear the Watchman conference, and that will be September 30th, October 2nd. That'll be in Knoxville, Tennessee. I'll be speaking on the first day, but I'll be there all 3 days. And if people want to get into these long conversations like you had with Steve Quayle, Doug, I'd love to do that with people. I make myself fully available for the entire conference for breakout sessions or individual conversations. L.A. Marzulli will be there, Paul Begley, Pastor Paul Begley, Dr. Michael Lake, Russ Dizdar, Josh Tolley, Coach Dave, a lot of these guys, and John B. Wells. We're all going to be there September 30th in Knoxville, so great time to come and meet us, and I really enjoy meeting people who have followed my work and have more in-depth questions than we're able to handle on the air, and things that I can't say on the air that I will say privately to people I'm happy to do. So that's my shameless plug for the night, besides the book you've beautifully shared with people for us, and I appreciate the opportunity for us to do that on your show, you guys.
No, absolutely. We really appreciate that.
You know, it's a well-written work, and it's interesting because, again, referring back to your article that describing you know, your appearance tonight, the Bible expresses that the humans, us, we, God's creation, we're the center of God's creation. And God himself came to redeem us, you know, that's at the epicenter of everything. That's at the basis of everything. And I would submit to our listeners, as you get old, I mean, our demographics, we've got a wide range of listeners from all, I mean, countries, I don't know, well over 100 countries listen. The fact is this, in my view anyway, the most important thing is as we age, as we face our mortality, and even the issues, whether it's the elections or the economy or whatever it might be. I mean, what more important thing can we talk about than our relationship with God and our place and our duties and our reward? And I think you really do a great job through your work and your conversations and your columns, both of you, in really supporting that. Thank you so much for being part of our program tonight.
Thanks. No, we really really appreciate it. I think I might just, you know, sort of my last comment might be to quote. I sort of have a Presbyterian background. Sorry about that, but I find this is a statement that's always good to kind of keep in the center of our thinking, and it's from the Westminster Confession of the Reformed Church, and the question is, what is the chief end of man? And the answer is, man's chief end is to glorify God and to enjoy Him forever. You know, it kind of comes down to that.
Amen. And there it is. And there it is. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. We've reached the virtual end of our program. We'll take care of some housekeeping issues after we'll let you go. But I just, again, thank you both for your gift of time. I just, you know, the book itself, it's a great read. 316 pages, available on Amazon. And, of course, it'll be available at the conference for those attendees. Is there any way that I can get an autographed copy? How do I do that? If I want to get an autographed copy, who do I contact? Who do I contact?
Well, you can contact me. Just send me your mailing address. I mean, I know you're up there in, you know, Erie, Pennsylvania somewhere, but tell me more specifically, and I'll get you a couple of copies, maybe several.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I'll give you my address right now. I got a pen. Yeah, everybody's going, okay, yeah. Finally,
well,
we can.
If
finally,
you want
to
tell it on the air, I didn't
know
you wanted
no,
to
no,
give
no.
the mailing address. But anyway.
No, actually.
Send me a note.
Well, and not being serious now, can people get a copy from you or from Anthony or anyone?
Yeah, yes. If folks want to just send an email to me, you can send me a note at doug@doomsdaydoug.com, and you'll need to send me, I'll know your email address, I'll need to know your physical address, where to send it to, and then what I'll do is I'll mail you, the listener, I'll mail you a PayPal note, and then you can pay me, and then I'll ship it to you. So the cost of the book's $21.95, and you know, shipping is typically $4 to $6, depending upon what speed you want, whether you want pack mule or you want basically a jet to get it to you.
Well, if it was quantum entangled, it wouldn't be an issue.
It'd be instantaneous.
No, it'd be there yesterday. You said
that's right. It would have already been there.
Yeah. Gentlemen, thank you so very much. God bless both of you. God bless you. Thank you so very much, and we really appreciate it. All right. Good night.
Good night. God bless.
Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, how was that? Huh? I mean, what a great. Two guests that just really rocked the house. The rock stars, really, in their own right. And I say that, and of course, I just want to be serious. They're very, did you get the intellectual acumen? I mean, their knowledge, my goodness, it's great. Folks, tomorrow night, the rest of the week, we got great shows lined up for you. Please watch our website too. I just want to let you know about that. I've got some breaking news coming out here shortly. I don't know when. It's going to depend on my source, when I can get the information. Joe, I'm going to kick it back to you.
Yeah, tomorrow night we have in hours 2 and 3, Matt Truella. And then Friday we have Augusto Perez. It's been a while since Augusto's been on the show. He's going to talk about some current events, geopolitics, and a conference he has going on in the near future. And then next week, the gentleman that Anthony Patch and Douglas Woodward was talking about is coming on Monday, Dr. Michael Heiser.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
As well as we got a special for Tuesday and Wednesday.
Yes.
Dealing with Obama, Fuddy, and some connections to things that we've explored but haven't finalized as far as investigations are concerned. And Dr. Michael Lake next week also.
If I can just speak on the on next week, the results of a long-standing investigation will be revealed on our program, and it does have to do with the Fuddy, the gatekeeper of Obama's birth certificate, her alleged death. I have seen the investigative documents the results of the investigation. Remember, folks, back when you were, when we were talking about filing FOIA requests, and you, everyone, it just seemed like everyone just got together and says, okay, we want those documents, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars were sent in, and we used that to obtain the documents necessary to expose, among other things, to expose something which I guarantee you, when you see this, when you see the evidence pertaining to Fuddy and Obama, and you're just going to be blown away. And we're putting this together now. Two very brave individuals are behind this. And, well, more on this as we get closer to the program dates, but we're going to cut this in two segments, 90 minutes apiece, that program. But when you see the investigative work product, that is, you're just going to be blown away. So really watch our website. I'm going to have a full detailed explanation on that. So excited about that. I just want to, one more thing. God bless every one of you. Thank you so much. We are a listener-supported show in large part. You've done so much to help us stay on the air against all odds, against the censorship, and against the people who want to take us down and shut us up. Thank you. Thank you for your prayers and for your support. God bless each and every one of you. Saddle for battle.